Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our Morning Talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're going to underway here with Doyle in just a second. One thing I do want to mention is that we had expected to be talking in the second hour today with poet Toy Derricotte. She teaches English at University of Pittsburgh and is going to be here on the campus for an event. This is part of the Carr reading series. Her travel plans were disrupted, so she won't be here to be able to do the show with us, the focus with us in the 11 o'clock hour. But I do want to make sure that people here in Champaign-Urbana know that her reading that was scheduled for this afternoon is still on. It's still happening. So if you're interested in meeting her and hearing from her, she'll be giving a reading at 4:30 this afternoon in the Author's Corner. That's on the second floor of the Illini Union Bookstore. It is open to anybody who would like to attend. They should feel welcome. And then what we're going to do is when she gets here, we're going to sit down with her in the studio and we'll talk about her writing. And sometime later, you can hear that as a Focus program. Well, this is the first Wednesday of the month and has been our great pleasure for a long time here to talk about food and cooking with the man we like to call our chef in residence. And yes, he likes to say that. And of course, I always say, no, nothing reticent about this man. Doyle Moore has been doing this with us for a long time, and we always have fun when he is here talking about things that we have been making or that we have made, associations between our histories and our growing up and places that we've been and food. And always exchanging recipes and cooking tips and having a good time. And he's the guy who comes up with the topic. It's divine inspiration. And so he calls me a couple of days before the show and he says, okay, this is what we're going to do. And he said this time around he wanted to talk about crepes, or perhaps you say crepe, that thin pancake thing that the French make and a lot of people in other places make. So we'll talk about that, and he maybe will have some recipes to share, and maybe people who are listening will have some recipes to share or some stories to tell. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And email, we got that too, will-talk@illinois.edu, will-talk. Is the thing to use if you want to write to us. Hey, thanks very much for being here once again.
Yes, indeed.
I was thinking about that. This is one of those things that in food, certain things become intensely popular, and everybody wants to do them, and then it cools off, and it's not as exciting, and then we go on to something else, and I think it's too bad because those things were good. I don't know why it was, one day you wake up and you think, we don't want to have that
anymore.
Well,
that's part of my philosophy. You're absolutely right. Part of my philosophy is, well, if it was good enough then, why isn't it good enough now? But it does come in bunches and batches. But I also, the reason I was interested in crepes is that I just bought a new crepe pan. And it's 11 3/4 inches wide. It's a great big wide one. It's French or Italian in style, and it's bigger than the little one. I've got two crepe pans. Why did I have to buy a new one? Well, because I wanted the big one, because a great big crepe is totally different from a little one, and the little ones were very fussy. A lot of people are afraid of cooking crepes because they think that it's very difficult. Well, no, you just have to be careful. It's not difficult. It's just care. And they are cantankerous little boogers. And you have to deal with them just exactly right.
And do you now, and I think maybe people think that they have to have some sort of dedicated pan, but and I'm not sure that that's right, but I think you do have to have a non-stick pan.
Now you see the old French crepe pan that I got was just hammered iron steel.
It was like
big press came down and made a pan.
Okay.
It wasn't stainless steel or elegant was like it? That. It was really rough, really, really very rough. And you had to prime it and get it just right. And it had little side edges on it so that it wasn't. You really never wanted to use it for anything else but crepes. And of course, somebody would come into my house and insist on doing some strawberries in it and pitted the whole thing, and that made me very upset. And so, which is another reason why people, you have to take care of a crepe pan, mm-hmm. and keep it seasoned and clean. And it doesn't take very much to clean it because it's not a messy project. But the new one I got is cast iron and enamel on the back, and non-stick surface.
It has a non-stick on
it. Surface, and so it uses very, very little oil. In fact, all you do is kind of have a wet cloth that you've dipped in a little oil, or if you could use butter, but oil is even easier, and just kind of smear it across the pan, and it works beautifully.
Okay. Well, that's, I guess also I was thinking about the fact that crepes, really what we're talking about here is it's a pancake. That's really
well, yes, it is, but no, it ain't.
Okay.
It's a pancake, but it's much thinner than a pancake, and it is that very, very thin, and it only takes maybe not more than about 30 or 35 seconds to cook on one side, and then you carefully turn it over, and then there's all that business, the turning over business. You know, you're saying, here you are faced with your first crepe. Oh, what am I going to do? How am I going to do this? And you try to mush around in there. And actually, you can reach down and pick it up with your fingers. The regular little 6-inch crepe is easy. You can pick it up with your fingers and flip it over. And you might loosen a little bit with a spatula, but you can pick it up and turn it right over. And it's very flesh-like. I mean, it never crisps up. It isn't a crisp. And it's floppy, and then turn the second side over, and you don't have it more than about 10 or 12 seconds on the heat, as it were. And then it's done, and you put it aside. And then, of course, if you don't do it right, just they all stick together.
You should be able to stack them and then peel them off in that way.
You
probably
could stack a piece of paper in between.
Oh, okay. If you were worried about it.
Well,
that would be a shame to go through all that work and just come up
would,
with a big
and
lump
end up
of...
with a big glob, and then you get mad at them, and then all that anyone ever heard of. Oh, I'm never say never and always avoid always. I know, but the only thing anyone knows about crepes is, oh, crepe Suzette's. Well, that was really popular in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And no one's made them since. I mean, I'm pushing that metaphor. But then I come to find out that there are lots of things. And I've made up a couple of recipes that are, they're not unique, but they don't exist in any books of any sort, and I've been interested in the idea of crepes that are savory instead of just sweet things, because it's always been crepe Suzette, which is orange juice and some liquor and cook them up and fold them over and
light them on fire
and light them on fire and the fellow is doing it right at your table, that sort of thing. And so I thought, no. There's a lot more possibilities, but the latest thing I found out, this sends me into gales of laughter. To make a crepe and with the great big ones, it's even easier, and then you roll it up, and so it's a tube. And then you cut it across, and you make a pasta by cutting it in about 3/8 of an inch pieces, chunk. You got all that, and then put a nice Alfredo sauce on that. It is delightful, totally. It makes me laugh because what happened to that? And there are crepes that are put into soup. sometimes eat either chopped up as a pasta. I've got the name of it here. A boiled soup. These are the bottom. Instead of putting a chunk of toasted bread in the bottom of the soup, you put a crepe, or you cut the crepe in pieces and have like little noodles in the bottom of the soup, and that pleased me very much. So I know there's people who are making these, but maybe people that want to make them. And I certainly say, get in there and do it, because it is so straightforward. I remember, many years ago, when I was making crepes in Iowa City, as a matter of fact, as a graduate student. That's a long time.
What year was
1957.
Was anybody else in Iowa making crepes at the time?
Well, the group that I was with, we made crepes several times, and it was always an argument as to what you were supposed to do and how to do it. You can make the crepe in a blender. You can make it in a Cuisinart, which hadn't come out yet. But you must let it sit for at least a half an hour. Well, that's we now take that for granted when you're making things with flour and liquid, and that is to let the flour hydrate and soak up all of that. So you can't just whip it up and start making the crepes instantly. The first place, there's bubbles in it, and the bubbles have to kind of disappear, and you end up with a nice, nice smooth batter. But mainly, it needs to, and some say put it in the refrigerator, and some say just put it away. But the thing is, it has to sit. So that was an argument in the early days, because you said, no, I made this, I'm going to cook them right now. And of course, they all failed, and we were all screaming, and everything was just up for grabs until finally you figure out what to do with that. But the secrets are to make the bat, and they're almost all of them are so identical that. I wanted to start with Alton Brown's recipe, because I like Alton Brown, and the day that he did the crepes on television was a good day, and it was a very straightforward recipe. 2 large eggs, 3/4 of a cup of milk, 1/2 of a cup of water, and a cup of flour. Now, he doesn't say what flour, but you can use any flour. In fact, I've got a couple of recipes that use some odd flours. Some people even want to use cake flour, because there's less gluten in that. And, of course, this doesn't get gluteny anyway, because it's a very liquid thing. It isn't going to tighten up and be a dough. Uh-huh. And 3 tablespoons of melted butter. So that's eggs, milk, water, flour, and melted butter. That's all there is to it. And then you can do it in a blender, and you just pulse it for about 10 seconds until it's all done up. And then you put it in the refrigerator. It allows the bubbles to subside, and it will be less likely to tear if you don't have those bubbles in it. Because the bubbles then sort of weaken the structure of it. It's very dainty. I mean, they're very, but that also is the reason you want to eat one. Because it's such a nice soft taste, and like somebody really went to a lot of trouble. I sometimes go out to Pancake House and get the Scandinavian pancakes that they make, which are very much like crepes, and I enjoy that very much because they're dainty, and somebody really did something to make them work. So that's what you start with.
Okay. The man here is the guy that we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. It's the first Wednesday we have for a long time now been talking about cooking, and we always have a good time. And there's usually a theme. We don't always stick to the theme, but at least we start with the theme and then we see where we go. And this time around, he said, well, he'd like to do a little talking about crepes. And these are things that maybe seem really mysterious and seem really difficult. And as he's just said, well, actually, no. It's the basic batter, it's not that complicated. You don't really have to have a really fancy pan. It probably helps if you have a nonstick pan. But if you practice a little bit with it, probably after you do a couple, then you'd say, oh, why did I think this was so hard?
Exactly.
Why did
exactly.
I think this was so hard?
Now, when you use a small pan, you put the batter in the small pan, not more than a quarter of a cup of batter, and then you swirl the pan so that it reaches all of the edges of the pan, and that's the classic little 6-inch crepe that you get if you have bought that little French pan mm-hmm. that has to be bought, and that's one way. This 11.5 piece that I've got has got a wooden device. It's a T-shaped, two dowel rods formed into a T, and you hang on to that handle and you put the center into the middle of the pan and you sort of twirl it around, and what it does, it scoops and moves it around. Then last night we were making crepes at Japan House, and with that you pour the batter down, and then you take the cup, the quarter inch measure cup that you've got, and you use it and you smooth it out. It's another little. It does the same thing. It's to smooth out and make it spread out a little bit farther. Mm-hmm. And I kind of laughed at that because you pour it out and you use that pan to flatten it out a little bit. And there wants to be a way of making it thin, very very thin, and then it's going to cook in somewhere between 45 seconds. A minute is almost too long to cook it. So you can't put it in there and decide to walk away and see what's going to happen. And you don't want them brown. They crisp a little bit around the edges, and the tops should be dry. That's the main thing to think about is that that it doesn't look wet and glossy on top. It's just a little bit dry. Then you know you got it. Because it's cooked all the way through if you've done that, and it's mm-hmm. dry on top. Then when you flip it over, that's just a matter of sort of heating that second side just a little bit. It's not, no problem.
Okay.
But those are the secrets. I know other folks have got secrets. I want to hear some people tell about their experiences with crepes, because that's mine.
All right. Well, if you have an experience to relate, give us a call, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. So if it would be a long-distance call, use that. And you can also send us an email. We'll be happy to take them. And that's will-talk@illinois.edu. And we're talking about crepes. And this was one of those things that you know, sometimes before the show I want to think a little bit about what it is we're talking
yes.
about or look around. And I realize that crepes or something like them are, you know, we think of that as being, well, it's a French thing.
Yes.
But that a lot of places around the world, different people are doing things that essentially that's what they are. They don't call them that. But that's what they are.
Yes.
And it interests me that there are so many things that are that you find a lot of different places, and it's I don't know what exactly that what that means.
Well, it's technique. And the techniques vary. I have an Indian recipe that uses gram flour, which is a chickpea flour, and I have a recipe with buckwheat flour, and so there's no. And then if you stop and think about it, now that I'm thinking, the Southwest American Indians used to make a a material that they ground up the cornmeal and then would spread it out on a flat rock that they'd been heating, and it would make a very, very thin sheet of this, and then it would start to crisp, and you would roll it up, and you had these big, big rolls of crisped bread that were just micro-thin.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the names of all that, but blue cornmeal was used.
Well, now, it also
come to think of it, I never even thought about it until you mentioned that. Yeah,
it starts me thinking about, is it naan? The Indian bread
that's thicker. That's a yeasty bread,
okay.
And it's thicker. And you slap that on the inside of the tandoori.
Well, I guess that's what I was.
But they end up being at least 3/8 of an inch thick.
Oh, okay.
So they're much thicker. No, these are delicate little softnesses.
Okay. Well, we have a couple of callers here. I'm actually interested in what you do with the Indian. One.
We
can talk about that.
We'll talk about that.
We have two callers. They're both in Urbana. We'll start out here with line number one in Urbana. Hello.
Hello. When I was a child, we called them German pancakes.
Oh,
my
yes.
Serbian friends called them palacinka. I've discovered that Scandinavian people called them Swedish pancakes. I never heard them called crepes until I was in college, but they were.
You know, it was the Swedish pancakes that I was talking about that I go out to the pancake house and get. They're Swedish pancakes with lingonberries on them.
When you gave out the recipe, I didn't get the two eggs and the milk and the water. 3/4 milk and how much water?
A half a cup of water.
Half a cup of water.
This is Alton Brown's recipe. Yeah. Two large eggs. Sometimes they want three eggs. But for the most...
Yeah, well, the proportion of flour to eggs seems a little higher than I remember making, you know. When I was a kid, this, my father could make them.
Oh, really?
And we didn't have a special pan, and there was no such thing as a non-stick pan.
Oh, right. And so the first ones had to be thrown away, and then you would go on to that later. I have another recipe where it's only a cup of flour, one egg, and olive oil. That's David Rocco's recipe.
That would definitely be different. We never used olive oil for anything.
Yeah, a tablespoon.
You know, this was something that we really liked when I was a kid.
How were they finished off? How did you eat them?
Well, you spread them with jam or something and rolled them up and put them on the plate. And
oh, yeah, and so they were rolled up on the plate. That's good.
Yeah, we rolled them up.
And then did you put any powdered sugar on top? I know that's
it could be done. Yeah, I come to think of it, yes, I think sometimes we did put
that would be sweetening it up just a little bit.
Hey, that was 70 years ago.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. So I'm glad you and I remember.
All right. Well, I thank you for the story. This line about the dad, what I was thinking about before was when I was a kid growing up in my house, the only guy who could make pancakes was my father. And he had an old-fashioned griddle, the kind that you put on top of the stove. Mm-hmm. So you put on top of the burner. It also did not. It was some kind of cast metal. There was no nonstick, and somehow he was the only guy that had the touch, so that he could make pancakes. So if he wasn't in the mood, there weren't any pancakes because nobody else knew how.
They
to
knew
do
how
it.
To do it.
So it was one of those things that was a dad. And my house growing up was a dad thing. He'd made a few things, but what the things that he made, he was the only one who could do it.
But that's because he knew the technique.
And here I'm just interested in also I got an email from someone who had a crepe experience in the Netherlands. And he said, perhaps not precisely crepes, but in fact, he sends a photo, which, doesn't quite work here on the radio. But he said he had this dinner aboard the pancake ship, the Pannekoek ship, anchored in the river in the middle of Leeuwarden. Leeuwarden. My My Dutch is nowhere here. But he said that it was loaded with all sorts of meats, bacon, sausage, ham, etc. And he said that the Dutch referred to it as, quote, the American. So that's just another example that you can find something sort of like this. And, oh, there we go. Here's a picture. Now, that's interesting. That it almost looks kind of like a
big pizza.
A big pizza or maybe an omelet because it's very browned. It's kind of browned on top, and it looks like it does have some meats in there. And, well, that's very interesting.
Well, now you're kind of almost pushing that toward a frittata.
Yeah, oh, yes.
In a way.
I can see that, yes.
And then that gets us into another area, but that would be it.
Okay.
Laden with stuff on top.
All
good.
Right. Hey, well, thank you very much. Questions are welcome. Recipes, comments, stories, what have you. This is the program that we do once a month with this guy that we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. And we're talking this morning about, he said he would like to talk about crepes. And we're doing that. You have a story, you have a recipe to share. That'd be great. Right now, though, let's take a very quick break. Then we'll be back at it. This is Focus.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by the Brown Bag Deli in downtown Monticello. Brown Bag Deli offers freshly made casual lunches and dinners, homemade pies by Inge, gourmet foods, and a wacky collection of unique cards and gifts. Brown Bag Deli encourages you to join them in supporting WILL.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics every week, and you can go to our website and see the schedule, find out what we'll be doing. I do, again, want to mention that we were planning in the second part of the show today to talk with poet Toy Derricotte from the University of Pittsburgh. She's visiting here at the campus. We'll be giving a reading. Her travel plans didn't go as planned, and she was not able to be with us in time to do the show. However, she will be here on the campus. The reading that she was going to do still going on. This is as part of the Carr series. So she will be giving a reading on the U of I campus 4:30 this afternoon in the Author's Corner of the Illini Union Bookstore. That's on the second floor. So if you'd like to meet her, hear her, you can stop by. These are all open to the public. It's something that's sponsored by the Department of English here at the U of I, the Creative Writing Program. But I think what we're going to try to do is get her into a studio and sit down with her and talk with her about her writing, get her to read, ask her to read, and sometime here in the near future we can put that program on so you'll have the opportunity to hear it. Also, I'd like to mention that one of our regular topics will be up for the show tomorrow. This is our regular program on computers. Celeste Quinn will be hosting, and Jim Irick and Deborah Flieger will be the guests. We built this into the schedule so that you will have a regular opportunity to ask computer-related questions. So if you got a problem or you're thinking about buying a new one, you can give us a call. That's tomorrow. Our website is WILL.illinois.edu. You can check the schedule there. Also listen to past programs. You can also find us on Twitter, Will Public Media. It is the first Wednesday of the month. It has been our great pleasure for a long time here to talk about cooking with the man we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. And each time we do this, he picks a topic. Usually it's something that he's been cooking or has gotten excited about and said, well, let's talk about that and trade stories, recipes, questions may be asked, answers possibly may be given. One doesn't really quite know. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We're talking about crepes. You got a crepe story, recipe, you can call us. And let's go on here. Line two is next. This is Urbana. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
Hi. I don't have a recipe because I'm not by my recipe box, but I've got a story about the buckwheat pan crepes.
Oh, my, yes.
I spent a couple months doing my student teaching in the early 80s in the town of Madawaska in the state of Maine, which is across the St. John's River from French-speaking Canada. And this is a French-speaking community from, you know, for hundreds of years in the United States. And they held on to some of their traditions, and one of them was the ploy, P-L-O-Y-E-S is what they, how they spelt it.
Boy.
And it was buckwheat crepe. And they had a special ploy skillet that you could buy, which looks just like a crepe skillet. And they would have it for dinner just about every other night. On the off nights, they would have potatoes, which they grew in great quantities.
Oh, yes.
Stored in bins like we store corn.
Right.
You know, multi-stories high full of potatoes. And if they didn't have potatoes, they had ploys. And the only way they ever served them was with butter. I'm speaking specifically about the family that I stayed with. I know what the rest of the families did, but we always had ploys just with butter and rolled up, and it was just like a dinner roll on the side of the plate.
Hmm. And it was made of buckwheat.
Yes, buckwheat flour. It kind of gave it a greenish tinge.
Buckwheat flour. Buckwheat flour has the hulls in it, and that is the color of buckwheat. Now, you can buy buckwheat in this town. I just did. In fact, Bob's Red Mill makes a buckwheat.
I've seen that in the store.
Yeah, rather quickly. Let me jog your memory. This might be something you would remember. 2/3 of a cup of buckwheat flour, and 1/3 of a cup of all-purpose flour, and 1 3/4 cups of whole milk, and 3 large eggs, and unsalted butter, about 2 tablespoons of unsalted butter, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt. This is a recipe that I have of buckwheat crepes. And you see, it's very much the same thing as the Alton Brown recipe. So it's flour and milk and eggs, and that's essentially it.
So, right. I don't remember the proportions. I do remember there was a little white flour as well as the buckwheat.
Buckwheat flour will fall apart if you try to use only buckwheat flour. It needs an extra binder with it. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. I just wanted to thank you for the memory, and I'm glad I got to share it.
A ploy. I like it.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, and also, interestingly enough, here we heard from somebody else on email who was listening to you talking about taking the cornmeal and spreading it out very thin on the stone. And someone here, in fact, writes in and says that the Hopi, they make something called Peaky bread.
Peaky. I knew it started with a P and it was a short word. Peaky bread, yes.
Peaky bread. Hopi make peaky bread, often very thin blue cornmeal batter spread on a hot stone, ultimately rolled up. It's paper thin and gray blue in color. In fact, there is a picture.
Oh, yes.
Peaky
and it's
bread.
Rolled up.
And it's rolled up.
And you unroll it and munch it.
Yeah. That's a
peaky bread.
Peaky
that's right.
Peaky bread. That's very interesting. And so the person who wrote in said that it's very thin, it crumbles when you eat it, it is used in many ceremonial ways and has an intense corn flavor. Other than that, it doesn't have a lot of flavoring. And there was a photo. Hey, thanks very much.
That's it.
Very good. Okay. Very good. Well, and we will talk with some more folks here. Charleston next, line number 4 right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good to hear us talk about crepes. First of all, it's pronounced Leeuwarden, that city up in the north of...
Oh, thank
of
you. Thank you very much for the pointer. I'm completely out of my, as I so often are, completely out of my depth.
Those Dutch spell things all incredibly.
Yes.
I wanted to join in the thing. My father was the pancake maker. It's either buttermilk or what we called Swedish pancakes, although we didn't have lingonberries at the time.
Uh-huh.
It was always lemon and powdered sugar. With the go on ours. And then, of course, I learned to do it. I cook them from my children. And both my son and daughter now know how to at least flip these Swedish pancakes or crepes. I never knew the part about letting it sit.
Uh-huh.
Because, boy, you make it up in the morning and it's on the pan. And then you've got, well, actually, we would separate the eggs and beat the egg whites.
That's rare.
Loose peaks.
Yeah, that's
and
rare.
And then fold that in. But then that kind of makes it kind of thick when you're putting it in the pan.
Yes, it does.
It's in the refrigerator for a day.
Right.
And then it comes out nice and thin.
Right,
they are
right.
Better the second day. And just one last comment, and that is the... I've seen them here in the United States, places that are selling crepes in stores, but then on the streets of Paris, instead of a hot dog stand, you'll see a little crepe stand where a guy has a sort of an inverted dome of a pan
Oh, yes.
The batter on the top, and then it rolls off the edge.
Uh-huh.
They're quite large.
They're very, very big, and they make a great big crepe, yes.
And then they've got all the things you might want to add to it over on the side.
Let me ask you a quick question. When you did lemon and sugar, was it lemon juice that you would squeeze lemon juice on it and then sugar that?
And actually, we'd start with a little butter first. Let the butter melt on the
on
pancake, and then powdered sugar on top of the
and
butter.
Powdered and powdered sugar and lemon.
Lemon
juice. That sounds good. I was reading a recipe like that, but they didn't say exactly what to do. It was just called lemon and sugar crepes.
What a good name.
So I thought, well, okay, well, how do you do that? I didn't know if you slice the lemon and what. Well, that's good.
Just
good. Well, you've helped me out a lot already. Thank you.
When I go to the pancake house and order the Swedish or German pancakes,
yes.
I forget what they call it, I always say, please bring me extra lemons.
Oh, all right. Yes. Well, your daddy taught you well, didn't he?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for the
story.
Thank
you.
I appreciate it. To Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for the show. I love this show. I have a couple questions. Are there any differences in making Swedish pancakes versus crepes? Because I try to make Swedish pancakes, but I can't get them thick enough.
Can't get them thick enough.
So I'm wondering if I should be using more flour or eggs.
Well, yes. I would say cut down on some of the moisture. If you were wanting to make them a little thicker, both of the recipes that I have puts water in the crepes. I would leave the water out, and I would probably add about 2 tablespoons more of flour. And so that it would be a little thicker.
Okay.
And you might increase the eggs, because that'll thicken it up. The eggs will make it thicker. So instead of using only 2 eggs, you might use 3.
Okay.
It's just a guess in my mind, that because they're so fundamental that there isn't very much you can change, and if it's too thin, thicken it up.
Okay. Thank you. The other question I have is, I have used oil sometimes, but when I do, like if the recipe calls for, I forget what it is, a teaspoon or a tablespoon.
Yes.
I've used vegetable oil, and what happens is it usually, and I've never let the batter sit, so maybe that was
That, you see, when you let it sit, the flour hydrates and becomes moist. It's wet as it is, but it soaks up and sort of mellows and makes a nice batter. And other than that, you just got kind of some flour floating around in water, and there isn't any body to it.
Right.
So
right.
That's the reason for letting it sit and hydrate.
Right. Yeah. And when I used oil before, they would just become very floppy and they wouldn't really brown.
Interesting.
I've had to cut down the oil to just a couple drops, but maybe if I let it sit, it will be okay.
That'll make the greatest difference.
Okay.
That's good. All right, great.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, see, now I'm thinking about something about completely different. I'm thinking about my cornbread. I'm thinking about how some people, and when I make it up, you know, you make up the batter, and when the batter is ready, it goes into the pan. That there are some people who say that you, when you're making a cornbread, you should let that batter sit. But I was never exactly sure, what was that supposed to be gaining me by letting it sit?
Well, the same thing. It would be hydrating the grain. But I don't know of any, I've never heard of having to let the cornmeal batter sit. I like to make pancakes out of cornmeal. And I've tried. There's a restaurant in Indiana, and they make they're so thin and crispy, and it's really hard to do. But the thing is, you have to make the batter very thin for that, and then they crisp around the outside edges, real lacy, and you turn them over, and they're thin little bits, and you don't find a recipe for that too much. But it's just a thinner batter. I know. I've got the recipe, and I try to cook it. And of course, I end up just using Jiffy.
Okay. Well,
Thin Jiffy.
Never mind. Now, okay. I wanted to hear about the Indian crepes.
Oh, yes.
And
all right.
what it was you do with those.
Yes.
Because that was one of the recipes that you'd brought in. In further illustrating, you know, the international nature of what it is that we're talking about here.
All right. The Indian, they're savory, mm-hmm. and you use a tomato shallot chutney with them. But the ingredients for the crepes is chickpea flour. Now, chickpea flour is called gram, G-R-A-M. If you go to the Indian markets here in town, you would ask for gram. And that's mm-hmm. not graham. That's not graham, like in graham crackers. It's gram, G-R-A-M, chickpea flour. And some salt and some cumin or caraway seeds and cayenne pepper and water. A jalapeno pepper chopped up, a fourth cup of fresh cilantro chopped up, and 1 1/2 teaspoons of canola oil, along with 3/4 of a cup of water and a cup of chickpea flour. So it's a little bit different. There's no egg in this. So it's flour and water and spices, mm-hmm. and they're whisked in the water, and then it should look like a thin pancake batter, but they also want it to sit aside for 30 minutes while it rests. And then you make chutney, and the chutney is made with shallots and salt and cook until they're transparent, and then stir in the tomatoes, which are finely chopped fresh tomatoes, but I believe you could probably use some diced tomatoes if you wanted to do that. And cook them until they're saucy, about 6 or 8 minutes, and then uncover the pan and heat it up a little bit hotter and cook it until it gets jam-like, which is another 6 to 8 minutes. So you've got them covered up, and they cook for 6 or 8 minutes, and then you uncover them so that they evaporate and turn into a thick jam. There's no sugar in that. So it's canola oil, shallots, salt, tomatoes, and a jalapeno pepper and fresh cilantro. And those cook down into a kind of a jam. And then when you have the pan is medium heat, well, high heat for 3 or 4. Oh, I didn't get around talking about heating. You want to heat up your crepe pan slowly. At least 10 minutes on very low, and then heat it up. I don't know what the difference is, but it is a stronger, more assured way, and also it doesn't. The one instruction it doesn't break the enamel on the bottom, but 2 or 3 recipes have said always start low, and that was on television the other night. 10 minutes, and then get into the business. So the chutney is then served on the side, or you could roll it up. You could roll it up, or you could fold it like a crepe Suzette. But it will be a little thicker than the elegant French crepe. It because chickpea flour is a little more sturdy. So chickpea flour crepe with this tomato chutney flavor to it. And it has a little bite to it because there's a jalapeno pepper in both the crepe and the chutney. So that's what makes it very Indian is that nice sweet and hot and tasty jam. But that's the major difference.
Chickpea sounds pretty
flour.
Interesting to me.
It is. It is good. I have gram. I cook with gram, and I make pagoda, where you mix up gram flour, and it's then with chopped vegetables in it. And you kind of make a little fritter with chopped vegetables and the gram flour, and you deep fry those. But so it'd be the same thing. I mean, it's chickpeas.
Okay.
Good stuff. About garbanzo beans.
They are good things.
Yes, they are.
I think they're underappreciated chickpeas.
Well, they are, but not in India.
Well, I would say in the United States they're kind of underappreciated.
Well, I think that they were a puzzle for a long time because I remember learning the word garbanzo before I learned the word chickpeas. So they were kind of a leftover Mexican thing that no one knew what to do with, and the idea of getting a fresh one or a whole one hasn't been until the last 15, 20 years. Could you get a dried chickpea bean at a grocery or at a store? And still a lot of people don't know how to do that. They all come out of a can now.
Yeah. Is it that much better if you actually start with the dried product? See, I'm thinking, isn't it one of those things that it's
is
good
not,
out of the can? Just
it's
pick
good
your favorite brand and
wash them out, and there is no difference, no real difference.
Yeah.
And then I never knew whether to call them CC beans until I found out that they're really chichi beans.
Chichis.
Yes.
As they say in sunny Italy.
In sunny Italy. As David Rocco would say.
Yes. Or my good friend Mario Batali.
Oh, yeah. I have a Mario Batali recipe, which one was his? That's Emerald. Ricotta. This pushes it in another direction, where now he uses 4 eggs, and 1.5 cups of flour, and 2 cups of milk. So it's the same proportions as the other, except just increase. He's going to make a larger amount, and the filling is 2.5 cups of ricotta, strained in a cheesecloth for 30 minutes, and then 1/2 pound of fresh mozzarella. And 1 cup of fresh provolone, and then chopped up salami, grated nutmeg, and butter. That makes the filling. Ricotta, mozzarella, and some provolone cheese, and a little bit of salami. I think you could probably use ham. Ham. Excuse me. And some nutmeg and butter. And you make the crepes. Except these are called crispellis, and you make a half moon and fill them with that cheese and such, and then roll them up and set them aside, and then they're baked with a little bit of the cheese on top of them. So after you've made them, you bake them, and that's going to melt the cheese on the inside, and that's a Mario Batali recipe. Crepes with ricotta.
I'm really fascinated about how many different things you can do with this.
I'm going to give you my personal brand new recipe that's never been made before.
Okay.
Apple butter.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And chop up an apple, and then saute the apple. Chopped up just a little bit, so it's just slightly a little softer. Mix that in with apple butter, which is really apples that have been cooked down a long time, and walnuts. And wouldn't that be a nice filling? And all you would do is just smear that on the surface and fold it over like a crepe Suzette. I would enjoy that while it's a little bit warm. But I don't necessarily. Now you might. I was thinking you might put a caramel on that. A caramel and apples go together real well. Mm-hmm. And so you, if you don't want to make a caramel, get some caramels and melt them, and then just drizzle that on the top. That's my own recipe. I thought that up in the middle of the night.
That's what he's doing. He's sitting around in the middle of the night. He's saying, I think what I'd like to do is take some apples. And
exactly.
Some
and I thought, well, why cook them down when the apple butter is already cooked down? Uh-huh. So apple butter with more apples in it, and then the crunch of walnuts, and then a little coating of caramel on top of that.
And nice. You get your different textures
yes,
in
yes,
there.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right. And the other thing, I come in the studio today, and on the counter in front, we have a little Ziploc bag.
Oh, there it is.
And there's a thing in there, and I'm thinking now, I know we're here to talk about crepes, but I'm thinking now, this really looks Japanese to me.
Well, it is Japanese.
And son of a gun, if it isn't.
But it's sakura mochi, and it is made with glutinous rice flour, shiratamako. Which is a rice flour. So it's 3 tablespoons of shiratamako, 1 cup of water, and 3/4 of a cup of cake flour. And that makes the batter. And 3.5 tablespoons of sugar and enough water to thin that down to crepe batter. And they only take about 20 seconds to cook. You just make little shapes that are about 3 inches by about 5 inches. So they're it's not a big round one; it's a long narrow one. And then you get the anko, red bean paste, and you roll those up into little ovals. And you cover that with this pancake, and then you roll that in a cherry leaf, which is cooked or not cooked, but brined. It's salty, So you have the salty taste against the sweet bean paste, and it's used in tea ceremony and in times when you want just the simplest sweet. But at this time of the year, this is cherry blossom time. So you're welcome to have a bite.
I
know you don't like
to. We have to stop. We had to go. We're all done.
What?
That's it.
I've got 215 recipes.
Well,
left.
I'm sorry. We'll have to leave it at that. The once in future
That's
chef
it.
In residence,
That's
Doyle
it.
Moore.
That's it.
Thank you very much.
Well, great.